The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. We're going to call this hour one. Albin, can we call this hour one?
Let's do that. Let's nail that sucker. Let's call it hour one right now.
And you know what I'll do? I'm gonna call an audible here. The next hour, we'll call it hour two. Would that be all right?
Brilliant. That's why you're you and I'm me. You're okay. Brilliant.
That's what I thought. So number one, hour one today, we're going to be talking to Kevin McCullough. Remember Vote Stradamus? Do you remember? Well, he is as awesome now as he ever was. And he's in our next segment. He's going to come on. We're going to keep him on for the whole hour and maybe drag him into hour two. And then we're going to talk to a new friend, Doug Lamb. Douglas Lamb has written a book called Men and Me Too. And it's about how are men supposed to behave? And we know we're supposed to be gentlemen. Some of us know, but it's kind of interesting. It's kind of important. And since here in New York, we have a governor that thinks groping is okay. Actually, it's not okay. It's not okay. Albin, I'm just telling you straight up. I don't care what you think. I'm telling you, it is not okay. And we have a governor. He has cultural differences. So in hour two, we're going to talk to Doug Lamb, but we're not going to talk about the governor, please. No, thank you. But anyway,
if he's still governor by the time we get to hour two, we'll see how that plays out.
I don't think he will be. Okay. I want to read a letter that I got yesterday that was so moving to me. But just before I read it, I want to remind my listeners before I read this letter, we're doing a fundraiser with Food for the Poor. Now, I got to say, this is the 1 year anniversary roughly of COVID breaking out in Honduras. That's where Food for the Poor is, reaching out right now to help them. Okay. So while we were dealing that here, the virus in Honduras was wreaking havoc because hunger, poverty, disease, these things are already rampant in a place like Honduras. Most of you know that, but we don't normally think about Honduras. But Food for the Poor, you know, they've got their ear to the ground, so to speak. And so there is a disaster that's there. They basically go where the disaster is. Okay. So recently there was a tropical storm. Some of you have heard about this. A hurricane following the tropical storm, both of them obviously devastating. Then there was flooding as a result of those destroyed farmland and crops. So they have a huge food crisis in Honduras. So Food for the Poor is on the job. There are relatives, Honduran relatives living in Miami, and Food for the Poor spoke to one of them, Martha Hernandez, about the situation. Let's play that audio.
Moments I start crying, then, you know, I need to keep it together because, you know, we need to continue working hard.
Martha Hernandez has family in Honduras, but her worry for them and scores of others, very real.
What I can do here in Miami is help them. And that's all we can do, and pray.
Well, it's not all we can do. That's the good news. Food for the Poor. They're on the ground there. They need our help. I just want to say, first of all, any of you who've already given, thank you. But I always say that it's not a question of whether we give. We all know we're supposed to give, that we honor God by tithing, by giving offerings, because there are people that are in dire need. So the question is always, where do we give? What's a safe place to give where you know that it's going to do good? It's why we partner with Food for the Poor. We've worked with them for a long time. A gift of $185 will provide five kids with food for 6 months. This is another reason we work with Food for the Poor. they know how to stretch a dollar. I mean, they're so efficient. They get huge donations, by the way, of food. And then a lot of this money goes toward transporting that food to get the food from wherever it's supposed to go, you know, to these places where it's so needed. So every $37 feeds one kid for 6 months. That is stunning, as you know. And that's how far our money in America can go in a place like Honduras. Obviously, if $37 can feed a kid for 6 months, $370 will feed 10 kids for 6 months. I just did that in my head. Isn't that amazing? But I want to say that this is a serious humanitarian crisis. We need your help. The reason Food for the Poor comes to us is because they know folks in our audience take this stuff seriously. Now, Albin, yes. We do this all the time, right? Right? If people are giving anything to Food for the Poor, and by the way to do that is go to MetaxasTalk.com. When you go to MetaxasTalk.com, you see the banner and you click on it, and it's very easy. I'll give you the phone number too. But when people give, whatever you give, folks, whatever amount you give, whether you give $37 or $3,700, whatever you give, you are entered in a drawing to win. We have 5 grand prizes that we're giving away, signed copies of all my books, my book, Fish Out of Water, a signed copy of that, signed copies of my Donald books, signed copies of other books, Bonhoeffer and stuff. And Albin, your 6 children's books are thrown in.
That's right. All the Hamster Homes books. I signed the whole box set for you. So it's great. So Hamster Homes, you get that as well.
You sign every book or just the box?
No, I just signed the box, seriously, because there's 6 books inside. You also get the hats, the T-shirts, you get the stickers. You get, I think we even throw in a mug. Once in a while, we throw in a mug.
T-shirts, mugs, stickers?
Everything, babe.
What's not to love?
I know.
This is unbelievable. What about those kind of like temporary tattoos that you could put on, like the one that you rub? We don't have.
Well, you used to go right to people's houses and just do it the whole thing, but we don't do that
anymore. We got to get Chris
COVID,
and you
COVID
on this. We need to get some of those temporary tattoos because we want kids to have the fun too.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, we know people don't give to get, but I want to encourage you. This is a really serious issue. We need your help. Anything we can do to encourage you, if you give anything, you're entered in the drawing, and 5 people will get these amazing packages, the grand prize drawing. It's our privilege to do that as a way of thanking you. Also, I always throw this out there. My time has gotten really valuable. I have no time, but I'm willing to have dinner with you and whoever, whether it's just a couple or a family, or you want to get 20 people together, whatever you want to do, I will show up and spend the evening with you. If you want Albin to come, that's $5 extra. But anybody gives $10,000, which is all tax deductible and which is going to help at that point, you know, hundreds and hundreds of kids. We want to thank you in that way. So I know there's some folks out there that they would say, I'd like to do this. I'd like to give a tax deductible gift of $10,000 or whatever amount. And we would love to work that out. So if you come to New York or I come to your city, we'll work out a mutually convenient time and we'll get to know each other, spend the evening, which is always fun. I love, love, love meeting folks. And by the way, we're going to be going back into the studio. Anybody who gives $500, you get a free studio visit. If you ever come to New York, and you could take advantage, you could bring 10 people. We're not going to stop you. So we want to say that. Okay, Albin, I want to read this letter before it's too late.
Yep.
This letter, I just want to say, sometimes I get so blessed. I'm not going to read the name of the person, but this wonderful, wonderful person wrote to me. And it says, Eric, thank you. I needed to let you know the profound impact of your book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. I needed to let you know the profound impact of your book, If You Can Keep It, on my 75-year-old father, who has a deep love for America, but little hope for it. I've been trying to share my faith with him for years. I'm a history buff, homeschooling mom, and I grabbed your book to supplement my daughter's American history class. I'd only read a few pages when I casually suggested my dad might like it. He grabbed it. He read it. He said it was one of the best books he's ever read. It opened his eyes to God's intervention in the nation he loves, which in turn opened his heart to God. For the first time, we had a real conversation about God and the transforming power of the gospel on a culture. He has purchased 10 copies for friends. I read this, folks, just because every now and again I get this kind of encouraging email. I read every single email, but I just wanted to say thank you to the person who wrote that and to encourage you folks out there trying to share your faith. When we come back, we're talking to my dear friend Kevin McCullough. Hey there, folks. Remember me from the last segment, American Taxes? This time I'd like to bring in a guest. Albin, have you produced any guests for me? You're the producer. You got to produce guests.
Okay. Yes, I got somebody great. I got somebody really great. Kevin really? McCullough.
Votes. Not ringing any bells. Let's have him on.
Oh, okay.
Hello, sir. Oh, yes. It's Kevin. I'm sorry.
Hey, Eric.
Kevin McCullough. Listen, you, sir, you always write amazing stuff. Before we get into the conversation about evangelicals for Biden, too, where do you post your stuff so people can read it?
All right. Thank you for asking, because Twitter deplatformed me. All of my social media is now primarily driven through Parler. So you can go to @KMC Radio on Parler and join me there. But you can also read my syndicated pieces at Town Hall, normally published on Sundays. Sometimes I will do an occasional additional piece if something really, you know, chafes me, which it did last night. We'll talk about that. My website is reviving a stream of editorial that we're going to do on a more consistent basis. That's thebingethinker.com.
So thebingethinker.com. Okay.
So kind of all over the place.
Thebingethinker.com. We got Town Hall. Listen, evangelicals for Biden, how do we possibly, there was a guy a number of years ago, Barry Lynn, and he would be on all the talk shows, and he was like the member, you know, he was the head of separation of church and state or something like that. He was basically an anti-God polemicist who would get on because he had this creative name of his organization. Evangelicals for Biden is like that. Like, you don't know how many of them are out there. But it just seems kind of a little kooky because Biden is dramatically pro-abortion, dramatically LGBTQ rights. And I don't mean like in the good sense of treating them like human beings, but about giving them special rights, which can be used as a club against churches and people of faith and organizations that are faith-based organizations. I mean, on every level, Biden is a disaster. And if you care about the poor, his socialist policies are going to crush the poor. So how do you even begin to say how crazy evangelicals for Biden is? But they've been in the news lately, and you wrote about it, and I want to hear about it.
Well, as of yesterday, so they entered the election discussion, so to speak, Eric, in very late 2020. In fact, I would say they entered, they went public and kind of made their presence known like in October with a November election around the corner.
Well, you know why that is? I just want to interrupt is because the check for the 30 pieces of silver didn't clear till October.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about it.
Follow the money.
So they came out yesterday and they released this letter on their website. And they're basically decrying the Biden administration for not having included them on the discussion about dropping the Hyde Amendment in the new spending bill, going after the Mexico City policy and a number of other things that normal, not, you know, common sense believers that have been even their pinky's worth of activist in the cultural issues of the day would have known that Biden and Harris were floating smoke at them the whole way through. They would have never believed him to begin with. So, but yesterday they feigned this outrage. How dare you leave us out of the conversation? And they send this letter. Well, in my piece at Town Hall today, and it's trending, it's very, it's one of the most read pieces on the website. I go back through this short history of who these people are. That first of all, they call themselves evangelicals, but I'm not sure that they qualify as evangelicals because I don't know how strictly they hold to biblical authority, for example.
But isn't that the point? It's a name. It's like a slogan that nobody can stop you from using it.
Yeah.
But they kind of floated out.
Well, that's why, kind of like that's why people like you and I, that's why you and I have to speak up and say, no, you can't use that word. It's up to the church to kind of sheriff who gets to say they are part of the church. Because if you are a heretic, I don't believe you should be calling yourself an evangelical or a believer or a Christian or anything else. This group of people,
it's like evangelicals for Satan. Wait a minute. Kevin, it gets silly. But look, we got to say.
But then they added the prefix pro-life evangelicals. So they're already setting themselves up to a certain standard that I'm not
sure.
Are
you serious?
No, that's the name of the organization, Pro-Life Evangelicals for Biden. So let me just back this up a little bit. They make this kind of foray into the election in October. They are utterly unsuccessful in terms of their own efforts, even though Biden wins, because Trump won more evangelical voters than any president in the history of the country ever.
Right.
And he won by, I mean, he had more incumbent as an incumbent. He got more votes than any incumbent president in the history of the country ever. So, and you didn't always have that be the case. When McCain ran, followed by Romney, Romney actually had fewer evangelicals vote for him as the nominee than McCain did. And there were, you know, explanations for why that was the case. But none of this was the case with Trump. Trump had delivered to the evangelical mainstream in big time ways. Judges, life issue, Israel, religious liberties. He knocked them out of the park. So when this group came along, in fact, there were people that were irritated with me because I kind of ignored them. I said, no, they're not even important enough to recognize. Why would I even talk about them? And then they come out yesterday and they say, oh, poor us. Biden ignored us. We wanted to have part of the pro-life conversation, and he just left us and kicked us to the curb. And I think if anything can be taken away from this, it should be this. When people come to you as a wolf in sheep's clothing, believe their essence, not their pretense, because this group, unimportant as they are, did great damage to the gospel, did great damage to the country, and did damage ultimately to the Lord that they claim to represent.
I got to ask you a question. These things just pop into my head, and I don't want to forget, and I will forget if I don't ask it now. Before we continue with this important conversation, which it is, it's related. I want to ask you, I don't get the impression, or let me state it more strongly, I get the clear impression that Biden is not leading the country. I believe that he's being led. Now, that is common sense observation. Most people are thinking the same thing, but I have a radio program. I get to say it. Biden is not leading the country. Now, if he was elected to lead the country and he's not leading the country, whom did we elect to lead the country? Or I should say, whom did we not elect to lead the country, who is in fact leading the country? And how is that not unconstitutional?
This is related to the piece I wrote on Sunday. So the pro-life evangelicals is what I published yesterday, but my Sunday piece deals with the exact question that you're asking, Eric, because it is my impression, as you have seemed to indicate, that Joe Biden is not in charge. I'm not even sure if he's in charge of changing his shorts on a daily basis, much less running the country.
I can answer that for you.
He
doesn't change them on a daily basis, but go ahead.
I'm not saying that to be, damaging towards him. I see the little old man that they shuffle out to do the press appearance like he did yesterday, where he forgot the name of the defense secretary, forgot the name of the Pentagon, didn't really know who he was talking to or what he was talking about.
He knew it was a multi-sided shape. Does he have to know that it's exactly like a five sides? Does he have to know it's a Pentagon? What if he said dodecahedron? Like, do we impeach him for that?
I would have given him more credit than saying that outfit over there. This drives home my point and yours that he doesn't seem to have the capacity to be being in charge right now. Now,
we're trying to be constitutional. If you don't have the capacity, and it's obvious to the American people, here's the issue. If we found out that, you know, Woodrow Wilson is in a coma and his wife is running the country, that's unconstitutional. We need to have proper procedure. If the president or the ostensible president is not behaving as the president, the country needs to know,
right,
is the vice president in charge? Who is in charge? Right now, that's not happening. So it strikes me we have a constitutional crisis. I don't know how you get around it.
So let me give you the best guess that I can kind of piece together. All of Capitol Hill is sitting behind a fence with razor wire on top of it. Joe Biden is not taking public meetings. he is barely having public appearances, and even those are tightly controlled. He shows up with note cards in his pocket when he loses his way. He pulls the note cards out. He can't even read what's on the note cards. Kamala Harris is taking all of the heads of state meetings. She's making all the phone calls. She's the one interacting with other heads of state across the world. I don't think any of this is particularly surprising for people that paid attention to the campaign, but here's where I think it all is coming from. Barack Obama never left Washington, D.C., unlike other presidents. Most presidents leave the Capitol once their time in office is over. Susan Rice, who was his most loyal foot soldier of all of the Obama administration officials, she went out on 9/11 of 2012, lied to the entire nation on all the television shows about the Benghazi attack, suffered no wrongdoing for that. In fact, she got promoted. She left the ambassadorship that she had in the UN, and she came into the White House staff after that event was carried out. So you've got someone who's very loyal, who is now Joe Biden's domestic policy chief advisor. And my guess is that she's also probably the author or responsible for the authoring of most of the executive orders that the executive branch has issued since he's been in office. My hunch is that President Obama is pulling the strings vis-a-vis Susan Rice. Susan Rice was on the list to be
vice president. All right, listen, we're gonna go to a break. You're in radio. Okay. You know we got to do this. Folks, you got to go to mypillow.com, maestro.com. Use the code Eric. Hurry up. We'll be right back. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Please go to mystore.com where most of my books are available. Use the code Eric. I'm talking to Kevin McCullough. Kevin, you were in the middle of an important point. Please continue.
So we're talking about who's really running the country. And my hunch is that while Joe Biden expresses symptoms of being diminished every single day, more and more, he doesn't seem to be keeping up even with his own schedule. I do feel like there is a kind of cabal around him that is calling the shots and kind of basically telling him what to say and do and when. Even when the White House pulled the plug on his virtual teleconference the other night, he goes, okay, I'll take questions if that's what you want me to do. Who was he talking to? Who was the president of the United States asking, I'll take questions if you want me to? Donald Trump never did that. Donald Trump told his people, stop it. I'm going to answer their questions and I'm going to go to the helicopter. And they actually, Governor Huckabee told me this 2 weeks ago, they actually on multiple occasions had to refuel the helicopter because he spent such a long time talking to the press gaggle outside the White House. Trump was in charge when Trump was president. I don't have that confidence. Susan Rice was a key foot soldier in the Obama years. She was considered for VP, but there was a lot of question about the baggage of the Benghazi issue and whether or not that would really tailhook Joe Biden. So Kamala Harris kind of was the placeholder for that position. I don't think Obama is particularly interested in getting Biden out and putting Kamala in place. I think what they want to do is they want to keep Joe Biden, the kind of clumsy, curmudgeon-y granddad that he is, in place and control the agenda around him as best they can with his handlers. And I would say that if you look at the first 60 days of his presidency, that's what they've carried out to a T. I could be completely wrong.
Kevin, this is but all it makes sense detail. The question is, how is it possible that we can have this in America? This is unconstitutional. I'm telling you again, when Woodrow Wilson was not doing it, he was not the president, and you know his wife was kind of running things in 1918, that was unconstitutional. When you have a president that, you know, anybody who's watched The Crown, when you have Churchill really ill, and Anthony Eden, who would take his place, is also really ill, that's a crisis. It is wrong. It is illegal and unconstitutional not to tell the American people who's running the country, because they are supposed to run the country through the person they elected. If America elected Biden, which I'm not sure they did, but if they did, then he ought to be the one leading. So how do we deal with this? This strikes me as not something that we can slough off. This is it's a slap in the face, another slap in the face of the American voter.
So let me talk strategically for a second, because there's a reason why Biden came to power. And as much as people don't want to talk about the inconsistencies with the vote and so forth, one of the reasons the Supreme Court kind of punted on the cases, and one of the reasons that as I've looked at the different states that were in question went the way they did, was because Democrats were active on the ground for years in advance before the election happened. And when COVID came to the opportunity to enact some of these things that they were wanting, non-verified signatures on ballots, ballot harvesting, the putting of ballot collection boxes within 2 miles of each other in Philadelphia while putting them 1,000 miles away in suburban and rural Pennsylvania. Those types of things were actually done in ways that they now have to be undone through state legislatures. The importance of my article from Sunday is that we are out of time waiting around and asking for someone else to go do this. We need citizen activists to today file to run for offices in these swing states. We need people to go and put pressure on their state legislators to change these voting relaxations, to stiffen them up and make them tough to be rigidly enforced again, the opposite of what happened during lockdown. Every day that we don't take active steps to reclaim our sovereignty over the electoral process, we're enabling a cabal to continue to do what they're doing with Joe Biden right now. And I firmly believe that they are. I have no evidence that any of the stuff I've proffered to you is actually happening. But from the outside and the way it appears, it sure feels that way. And it certainly has a reasonable way of being explained.
Well, isn't that the point? In other words, neither of us is a judge. We just look at what we see and we think, someone must look into this, because if you don't look into it, if you don't deal with this, then the American voters feel disenfranchised. That's the end of America. American voters cannot feel disenfranchised. You cannot have scores of millions of American voters not sure,
Eric,
what's
hear me
going
on, this.
On.
If we don't respond now, if we don't start recruiting people to work in the process now, if people listening to you at this moment don't say in their hearts, resolve, I'm going to go get involved in the process of my elections in my state and in my city today, we have already lost America. It's not that it's going to happen. It's that it has happened. And every minute that we delay involving ourselves in the process. And if you're a stay-at-home mom, start a CWA group. Get people active in your community. Start educating people about what's going on, because we will have a time in the very near future. This is the way Venezuela went. This is the way Cuba went. This is the way they all went. When you slide into socialism, the media takes control. The narrative is predetermined, and people of good conscience are not allowed to play the role that we have had the privilege of playing for over 200 years in this country. There is no more time to delay. We must activate, and it must begin today.
I have to say, first of all, if people want to find these articles, again, quickly tell us where they can find them.
Townhall.com, and just look for Kevin McCullough.
Townhall.com, Kevin McCullough. McCullough.
Yes.
Folks, we're going to be right back, continuing our conversation with Kevin McCullough, a.k.a. Votestradamus. Remember when we used to vote in America? You got to be pretty old to remember that. Please don't forget, we need you to go to our website, MetaxasTalk.com. Give to Food for the Poor. We'll tell you more about that. We'll be right back. Give a little bit of your love to me. Folks, I'm talking to Votestradamus, Kevin McCullough. Kevin, it's a joy to talk to you because I get answers, you know, and we're talking about what's going on in America right now. People often say, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? I'm not sure what people can do. You seem to have a bigger grasp on, I mean, I always say I'm a writer. And so I say, you know, read my book if you can keep it, because in there, I think you'll get a clue of what it means to be an American, and that you will know better what to do.
Yeah.
But I want to be more specific.
You're very good, Eric, at casting.
What are you suggesting?
You're very good at casting the big picture and the importance of that picture. What I'm talking about now is granular activism. So let me just start with one issue that every person listening or watching today can take and own for their community: election integrity. If there are rules in the way your elections are carried out in your state, If you're not even sure of what the rules are in terms of how elections are carried out in your state, start doing research. Find out if the signatures on your ballots are required to match something that's on file, a driver's license, a previous voting ballot, etc. If they don't have that standard on tap, ask why. Form a group that asks why. Form a larger group that says, we want it to return to that process. And ideally, start demanding voter ID for your state, where you actually have to face a name and a face. You have to match that with the actual right to vote. The other thing you can do on voting integrity is begin to fight for single day elections. Enough of this month in advance being able to vote and then not counting them till the very end and then figuring out, oh, here comes the mail-in ballots after the day of ballots have been counted. Push for a law in your state that requires all mail-in ballots to be counted before the day of election votes are counted the day of. Do exactly the opposite of what they used to cheat the election in 2020, which was figure out how many day of ballots they had. Then they could know the gap they needed to make up in those certain states. Insist on laws that do the opposite of that.
Not that we're saying cheating is wrong, folks. These could be just cultural differences that we have with each other. Some people believe in cheating and murder and stuff, and we don't want to judge them.
Critical cheat theory is what they call
it. We don't want to judge them, because who are we? Who am I, some white guy, to judge? You know what I'm saying? I'm very, very parochial. I could be wrong. Maybe cheating is okay, in different communities and different countries, in China, for example. So we're not judging. On the other hand, we're talking about election integrity. Kevin, you're saying it, and I want to repeat it. If we don't have election integrity in America, there is no America. The very basis of the country, very basic stuff. We, the people, we are the government. There is no government. We're the government. We deputize people to do stuff.
We hire them.
The deep state, the gigantic bureaucracy of the federal government and even state governments, it's wrong. We need to dismantle it. It becomes like an aircraft carrier that you can't turn it around on a dime, because it's just all moving in this predetermined direction. It's wrong. It's un-American, and we need to do something about it. So, Kevin, there are people listening right now. I know this, that God is calling to get involved, to do some of the things you're saying. If American citizens will step up and do what they can do, this country will turn right around, honestly. And it might be a moment that we have, that this tremendous crisis that we've been having is God's way of forcing us to step up. Because I think a lot of us have been coasting. Somebody else is going to do it. We can see that somebody else didn't do it, and that's why we're where we are.
Well, on some level, conservatives by nature don't believe that activism is something that should take up a lot of their life, because conservatives, particularly Christians, believe that I'm to be a steward of my family, and I'm to be providing for my family and raising my children and mentoring the next generation and leaving a legacy. We are involved kind of in an inward reflection and sheriffing of our own behavior and wanting to make sure that we pass that down. To go beyond that circle and to say, I want to, get involved in politics and legalities and other things, is a bigger lift and a bigger stretch. Whereas single progressives that live according to their whims and appetites, they have a lot of time on their hands. AOC was a bartender. She had nothing else going on in her life when she decided to become George Soros's favorite poster child for the progressive movement. This is one of the reasons why they have been successful. And I'm just trying to draw people's attention to it. We're going to have to carve out a priority to say it is important enough that we leave a free society for our children, that I'm going to have to take more time to invest myself in it than I have in the past. It's going to be a paradigm shift. But if we do not do it, Eric, if it does not happen, if people don't heed the call, and by the way, be encouraged, friends, because you've got the former president who's ready to pull the trigger on getting stuff done. You've got other groups. I already mentioned Concerned Women for America, but you've got the Heritage Foundation. You've got a whole bunch of organizations in Washington, D.C. that will help you set up community groups and get activated. But if we don't do that, the price will be that we will become not a softly socialized country, but a hardened, socialized, progressivist, communist country that does much more rigid things than what the soft socialism of Europe does. It's going to look more like Venezuela. It's going to look more like China. It's going to look more like North Korea. When the progressives are done here, we are not going to know what freedom looks like. And it's going to happen on our watch if we don't change it now.
This is our battle. This is our hour. I think a lot of times we say, oh, that's the greatest generation. Folks, you are no different than the people who stormed the beaches at Normandy. God gives us the ability to do the right thing, to choose the right thing. We are expected to step up. This is our time. This generation, we've been more blessed than anybody, and we've screwed it up big time. Here we are. I know, because of my Bonhoeffer book, I know the story that there's a moment when it's over. We're close to that moment, as Kevin, as you're saying, that there's a moment where if people don't stand up, and I particularly think of the church, real Christians, not evangelicals who think you could vote for Joe Biden, but the fact is people who understand I have a duty to the next generation. I have a duty to the poor. If I allow these wicked policies to come in, I'm on the hook. God will blame me for allowing this to happen. And we have a stewardship issue. Anybody whose theology is so stunted and abbreviated that you don't understand, God requires of you to be a good citizen. That is the whole idea of freedom, that we are to live out our faith by stewarding the liberty, the freedoms that we have for the sake of the people who don't have them. It's very important. We have an incredibly important role. Folks, I'm talking to Kevin McCullough. We'll drag you over into hour two. Kevin, folks, don't forget to go to our website, metaxastalk.com. We need you to go. Food for the poor. We're doing a campaign. We need your help. Thank you. It's just like a dream.
She is.
Hey there, folks. I want to remind you before we go to Kevin McCullough or return to Kevin McCullough, we are doing a fundraiser with Food for the Poor. Some people say, hey, Eric, how can I call to give? First of all, you can go to metaxastalk.com. You know the drill, metaxastalk.com. But I want to give this phone number out, because some people can give this way. $37 helps a kid for 6 months, feeds a kid for 6 months. This is in Honduras right now, which is where Food for the Poor is. They've had horrible, just so devastating. It's so amazing. There's tremendous poverty, tremendous, all kinds of problems. They get hit by a tropical storm, devastating, followed by a hurricane, more devastating, flooding, crops are destroyed. Huge problems. And so Food for the Poor is a great organization. So here's a phone number, 844-860-HOPE, 844-860-HOPE, 844-860-HOPE. I hope you'll give. Everybody who gives is entered in a drawing for a grand prize, which is amazing. Actually, there are 5 grand prizes. They're all equally amazing. It's the same grand prize. And it is. It's fantastic. I just did a Trump thing with my hands there. Albin, I want to say also, I keep saying this, but we're trying to get all my books available at mystore.com. That's Mike Lindell's website. Mike's standing right behind me. He's saying, use the code Eric. Mystore.com carries most of my books now, but not all of them. But we're going to try to get all of them on there, because, you know, with Amazon shutting down Parler, canceling books, I have friends of mine whose books have been taken off of Amazon. Mm-hmm. Why? Amazon carries Mein Kampf. Did you know that? You think there's hate speech in there? Maybe. I don't know. It was written, I believe, by Adolf Hitler. He's a young up and coming writer. Hitler. He wrote a book called Mein Kampf. It's carried on Amazon, but they've canceled my friend Ryan Anderson because he has a book talking about the transgender stuff. We're living in weird times. And as I say, because of that, I'm on more media platforms now. We're on Rumble. Follow us on Rumble, not just on YouTube. But my Pillow.com has an ancillary site called mystore.com. And I'm just saying, if you want to get the books at a, actually in most cases, a really great price, go to mypillow.com. If you put in the code Eric, the price is like, some of them it's insane. Like the Miracles book and the Seven Women book, the price is it's insane. It's less than half, whatever. But I just want to say that because I want to encourage people. First of all, I want to support Mike Lindell because he is a hero. And when somebody gets canceled and treated the way he's been treated, we need to step up and to support them. It's just not right. It's simply not right. Even if you don't agree with him, you shouldn't be treated that way in America for saying something like he's been saying. It's simply wrong. So I want to encourage you to go to mypillow.com, use code Eric, mystore.com, use code Eric. And again, most of my books are available at mystore.com. And we'll have more of them available there over time. We're running out of time, Albin.
Yeah, I just want to mention something real quick because people are always looking for something really great to watch. We always suggest you go to salemnow.com, use the code Eric, 20% off there. But they've got great new movies. One's called Watch. It's called America's Forgotten. Sorry, America's Forgotten, about the broken immigration system. If that's not in the news right now.
America's Forgotten. Okay, yes. So that's salemnow.com, salemnow.com, salemnow.com. And I think you also use the code Eric there, right, to save 20%?
That is correct, Eric. Eric, everywhere you go, at My Pillow, at my store, Eric, everywhere.
By the way, we should say salemnow.com. There's all kinds of stuff there. And people are looking for something wholesome and positive and good and whatever. Go to salemnow.com. Use the code Eric. Or when we come back, that crazy Kevin. You remember Kevin? Vote Sudamas, Kevin McCullough? Yeah, that's the guy.